Are you a big brain of the beautiful game? Prove it with the great new app that'll test your football knowledge to the limit. Name That Player. Download the Name That Player app today and race against the clock to identify the Premier League players purely from a list of the clubs they've played for. Put your football knowledge to the ultimate test with the Name That Player app. Available right now for iOS and Android from the App Store and Google Play. Name That Player. Can you beat the best?
Shoot the defence, the best podcast in the world. We're at it.
That should be a club legend. It's just totally disrespectful. And like I say, it's just a lack of respect, lack of class. And I hope we get relegated and liquidated.
Jan, do you want to do that voice of your barber so we can guess which nationality he is?
Are you ready?
Sounds like a really bad porno, mate.
And the fact that we had now taken our country and put our country on the map of world soccer, being the first African nation, the third world nation in the whole world to win an Olympic gold medal in soccer, you know, it was unbelievable. And with very young players, so it was...
Yeah, but I've seen misses, like, you
but
know...
But that wasn't a miss.
Misses, what he misses, he stopped his mate from scoring it.
Hello and welcome to Shoot the Defence. I'm your host, Stel, and I've got three co-hosts with me again this evening. First of all, Rodri Giggs. How you doing, Rod?
Yeah, I'm good, mate. Yourself?
Yeah, good, mate. Is the adrenaline wearing off now?
Yeah, it's calmed down now, yeah.
That's alright. I'm sure we'll be fine. Yeah. Guest number two, Connor from... It's not Radio Football anymore, is it, Connor?
No, we had to scrap that because I can't afford it. It cost me a bloody fortune. Uh-huh. So I changed name to represent the actual stuff we do, which is now Shootout. Fairly simple.
It's got nothing to do with us, by the way, even though it's got shoot in it.
No. You shoot the defence, I'll shoot out.
You shoot out.
come on.
Great stuff. Well, thanks for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it.
No worries.
And my third co-host is none other than Ben Dinnery, the fella that you hear co-hosting with me on the Late Fitness Test. Ben, welcome back, mate.
Thanks, Stel. I speak to you more than more or less, yeah. it's great to be here again.
Great to have you back on, mate. And again, thanks for doing the show with me. It's a great experience because obviously Johnny's got a lot of knowledge when it comes to, you know, injuries and whatnot, and yourself with all the injury news and everything. So yeah, it's a great little product we got there.
I'm really, really enjoying it, especially the two. I feel as if I'm saying a little bit of a flow, getting used to it. You know, I've been on a lot of podcasts before, but actually co-hosting a podcast was a bit of a different beast. And I must admit, I was quite nervous about how it would go. And, but yeah, really, really enjoying it. So I'm looking forward to doing this week's on Wednesday.
Great stuff. Well, I think that's the only podcast that goes from talking about injury updates to Tato Park in Ireland.
Yeah, man, there can't be many of them out there, surely.
Well, I'm going tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to it. So let's see. Right, football, Premier League, and let's start Molineux then, where another wonder strike from Ruben Neves and Wolves a share of the spoils against United. Rod, we spoke about this before we started recording. First half, United were in total control. Martial gave us the lead, and to be fair, we probably should have gone in at half-time 2-0 up. But the second half was a completely different story. They brought on Traore, and his pace and upper body strength, not power, gave Shaw a lot of trouble. But I think it's a fair result, despite Pogba's penalty miss, no?
Yeah, it was. You know, like you said, the first 45 minutes, we put them under a lot of pressure. We scored the goal. Like you said, we could have got the second. They had like a 20-25 minute spell. So yeah, they did deserve to score, but they deserve to get a result. Possibly, yeah. But, you know, it's a good result in the end because it's a difficult place. Like we were talking before we come on here. It's a difficult place. And if we would have given us 4 points in the first two, we probably would have taken it.
Are you a little bit concerned with the mental fragility, especially in the middle of the park? Because it seemed that once Wolves got on the front foot, it's almost as if our players, including Pogba, it got to them, especially the crowd, because the crowd were really up for it.
Yeah, it's difficult when the team scores and the crowd right behind him, and they've got the pace like they've got. You know, it's difficult, but yeah, that's where you need an experienced person in midfield who keeps the ball and tries to settle the team down. And obviously, we don't really have that. So, yeah, it was, like I say, it was a good point in the end.
Do you think that's going to come back to bite us then, that we didn't sign another central midfielder? Because apart from Pogba and Matic, we've only really got Pereira and McTominay. And again, they're still young.
And got Fred as well. And,
oh, yeah, sorry, I forgot about him. I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, really. But...
yeah, possibly, you know, because, you know, I know he's going to give the kids a chance, but, you know, by looking at it, Greenwood, yes. Chong, yes. Gomez, yes. Pereira, no. I just don't think he's. I don't think he's going to cut it, but obviously he'll give him a chance, and we'll see how it pans out.
Fair enough. Ben, I haven't been on Twitter since the full-time whistle blew, but I guess Pogba is getting ripped a new one. It wasn't a great penalty, but I think it was one of United's better players, and a lot of criticism is coming his way because obviously what's been happening in the summer about this potential move to Real Madrid, and people are saying that his heart's not in it and he can't be bothered. But, you know, the first two games of the season, he's been decent, so I don't know where all of this nonsense is coming from.
You know, where there isn't a story, they'll create one. And, you know, I mean, I'm not Pogba's biggest fan. But in all honesty, you know, his body language and everything tonight, he looked as if he was actually playing for United. He was playing for Solskjaer. And there was nothing there that I could see to suggest that, you know, he wanted away from the club. So, you know, I think he'd done all right. I think a draw was a fair result. You know, United bossed it in the first half. I was disappointed with Wolves. And maybe the second half, I think the Traore substitution definitely changed the game. And I think, you know, maybe with the Europa League qualifying games that they've had, and you know, they're, what are they now? Maybe six games into their end of their season. So they've, in terms of that match fitness and that sharpness, maybe that told a little bit in the second half, and that contributed to the, you know, the fact that they, like I say, I think they deserve to get back into it, and I quite enjoyed the game overall.
Absolutely. And Connor, it was a totally different Wolves side in the second half, but I think the game would have been beyond them had they played the better side. Now, Ben just mentioned the Europa League. Do you think it's already getting to them?
Oh, I think it's too early to call that. I mean, last season we saw Burnley struggle with the kind of extra games that the Europa League brought, and they really, really struggled, didn't they? But Wolves so far haven't shown any signs of real fatigue, and they've still got players who haven't played a lot of minutes yet. You know, they brought Cutrone on, who, from what we know of him from Serie A, is perfectly capable of doing the job. So I think it's too early to say the Europa League is going to be detrimental to them, because they've got a lot of very experienced players in that kind of remit, haven't they? The biggest difference with Burnley was a lot of Championship players who haven't had the experience of playing that level of intensity twice a week. Time will tell, but I'm pretty confident Wolves can cope with it a lot better than we've seen other teams before.
But the thing is, I mean, you've probably seen a lot more of Wolves than I have, but what I've noticed is that they don't seem to have, I wouldn't say like a plan B, because their system is basically 3-5-2 or, you know, 5-4-1. So when it comes to chasing a game like against United today, obviously they saw Luke Shaw as the weak link, so they put Traore on. But had United had a better left back or someone that with more pace, like a matching man for man, what would Nuno have done system wise? Because, like I said, I haven't seen enough of him to say, yeah, he's got the ability to switch it to a 3-4-3 or this and that. Has he got that in his locker?
He may well do, but I probably haven't seen enough of Wolves and have the tactical knowledge to really work that out. From my point of view, their plan B is to get Ruben Neves to shoot. And it seems to work more often than not. I just read the stat. He's got 5 Premier League goals, but only had 3 touches in the box this season. So, or since he joined, but that was that Oily Sailor. So
yeah, there's a Duncan Alexander from Opta. I think it was last season, wasn't he? He scored 5 goals last season, and he only had 3 shots inside the box, which is, or 3 touches, sorry, which is quite remarkable. But Ben, let's quickly go back to what we spoke about regarding the Europa League. Now, I know it's Rod's bugbear when it comes to, you know, us talking about it and saying, you know, Thursday, Sunday. From what you know statistically, is that a very valid point, or is it more of a psychological thing?
Very much so. I mean, statistics, I mean, first and foremost, you know, the more minutes you play, the greater exposure, the higher the chance of injury incidence. So, you know, that's sort of common sense. You know, so by playing that extra games, you're exposing your players more, and the potential to suffer injuries is greater. Then you've got the added fatigue factor, as it were, and Santo doesn't like to rotate very often, although he made 9 changes for what essentially was a dead rubber in the second leg against the Armenian side. I don't recall their name, and don't want to embarrass myself by trying to pronounce that. But if we look at, you know, we touched upon Burnley last season. They picked up a couple of key injuries. They just didn't have the squad to be able to cope with the physicality and the demands of the Premier League and the Europa. We could go back to when Leicester, they won the Premier League, and then went into the Champions League. You know, they struggled to adapt in the league form. West Ham, the same. So I think, you know, you definitely need to have the strength and the depth to be able to cope with the demands of playing, you know, 2 games within quick succession, high intensity matches. Otherwise, you know, one of those competitions you are going to suffer in, and the statistics will back that up.
Yeah, and it looks like their transfer activity in summer backs what you just said. They have recruited very well, and they're in it for the long haul, aren't they?
Yeah, look, I think this goes back to when they won the championship season. You know, you've got 2 rules of thumb. You either, you know, aim for promotion and then you build your squad to hopefully survive in the Premier League, or you do maybe what Wolves done and build a Premier League squad in the championship, in the hope that you will get promoted. But once, you know, you're up there, you've already got a team which has been bedded in. They know each other. They're used to playing at the highest level. And as we've seen, last season, they were a breath of fresh air to that Premier League. So I think they talk about threatening and to break, you know, the teams maybe breaking into that top 6. And I would say, you know, Wolves are probably, you know, certainly amongst maybe the Leicester Cities and, you know, maybe even the Everton's this season is a team that could potentially, you know, get in there and upset that top 6.
Watch this space, eh?
Right. Yeah, definitely.
There you go. Right, not for the first time this calendar year, VAR denied Mancete a vital goal against Spurs. Now, Connor, I'm not entirely sure what to make of this game, man. I know City were unsurprisingly dominant in possession, and they actually had some great chances to go back in front when Moura made it 2-2, but dare I say it, did they simply run out of ideas? Earth to Connor? I think
Connor, man down.
I muted myself, didn't I, like an idiot. So, the dog walked in, I didn't want him barking down the microphone.
That's alright, dog could have answered it for you.
I watched that Man City Tottenham game with very blurry vision and a hazy head. But, like I said about the Wolves Man United game before we started recording, I think when there's a heavy favourite, and Man City were favourites by a fair bit at home, if it doesn't go the way everyone thinks, people always look at the negative side of the better side. So, but I think sometimes you just got to give credit to Spurs. I mean, they did what they had to do to get the point. And if it was Man City running out of ideas, it was because Tottenham were doing what they had to do to prevent what Man City were doing. So kind of give a bit of credit to those Spurs players, I think, rather than being detrimental to Manchester City.
Yeah, I think Ederson might be a little bit disappointed with that Lamella goal because it was practically dead centre, wasn't it?
Yeah, he's one of my favourite keepers. I think he's got that bit of flamboyancy, but he just, there's something about him, and he's got those mistakes in him. Maybe mistake is a harsh word, but you know, I wouldn't blame him too much, because you can't go a season being perfect, can you?
Come on, man. He's a Brazilian goalkeeper. He's nothing but a failed centre forward.
I tell you what, I'd be a better centre forward than some players in the Premier League. Shane Long.
Careful. Ben, the stats show City had 30 shots, but Moura only needed half a chance to draw Spurs level. I'm sure Pochettino's actually really delighted with the result, but they rode their luck a little.
Yeah, you know what? Especially the way City started, and the way De Bruyne was pulling the strings there. And you fully expected City to go on and get the 3 points. But like I say, Tottenham dug in, done exactly what they had to do. It might have been pretty. They worked hard. And obviously, the introduction of Lucas Moura, and I think it was 19 seconds from that, the ball being in play and him heading home. You know, that's... is that a Pochettino masterstroke? And be very happy with that. You know, there's not many teams that are going to go to the Etihad and come away with a point. So, happy days for Tottenham.
There you go. And Rod, I'm going to leave the VAR question to you, because as you know, Jesus thought he won it in injury time, but the goal was disallowed for Laporte's handball in the build-up. Now, I don't know about you, mate, but it just seems that people were either upset with VAR being used or the new handball law. What do you make of this handball law, anyway?
Kevin De Bruyne comment, I don't see where he gets that. You know, if he says, like, if it should be one law, if it should be the same law, so if it hits a defender's arm in the box, should be a penalty. Well, a player could just be in the ball and just kick it at the player's arm. That'd be really easy to do. So,
yeah.
And this, the VAR. Out of all these decisions, have we had one wrong decision?
I can't seem to recollect any, really.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I've said it before. This football seems almost a law to itself. So, you know, our laws are changing. It's not changing. It's getting the correct decisions right. Yes, it's sometimes there's still a few things to iron out to get it perfect, but to be honest, it's never going to be perfect, but it's going to be 99.9%.
Yeah. I thought it was funny watching the VAR tonight in the Wolves game, where they were trying to figure out whether Moutinho was offside, and you can see the yellow lines and the blue lines and the cursor being moved around, and I could just imagine the guy, you know, wherever he is, think, oh, for fuck's sake, I can't be bothered. Just give the goal. Just give it. I can't work it out.
From that angle, it looked really difficult to tell. Obviously, they've been skilled on it and they know what to look for. And obviously, we're just looking at lines and different lines, so we don't know what to look for. But obviously, they've been through it all and know what they're looking at. But to me, it looked offside. But then, obviously, but then I looked at it again and think, oh, how could he be offside? He looks behind him. So, yeah, it was, you know, but ultimately, all these decisions have been the right decisions. So, you know, the City one, you can see that why the grievance with them. Because if you looked at 10 Tottenham players, not one of them batted an eyelid. Just all just happy to concede the goal. We're not happy, but, you know, if you see the goal and just walk back to the centre circle, not one of them put their hand up to handball. So you can feel the grievance, but. It was fun to watch, though.
Absolutely, absolutely. Well, look, gents, I'm going to pose this question to all of you. Aguero and Guardiola had a bit of a heated exchange when the striker was substituted. Can we read too much into this, or do you think there's something behind this? I know that they've got a little bit of history, haven't they? Connor?
I think it's just tempers are high and passions are high when you're in a game of such importance. We've seen players argue with their managers all the time and nothing really comes of it. People just are desperate to find a reason to kind of shit on Man City, I guess, aren't they? I know I'm saying that to people who are Man United orientated, but it's not just Man United fans. It's everywhere. Everyone wants to see the big guy fall. It's just what we do, isn't it, as a society, I guess.
But they did kiss and make up, didn't they? Before the Hizzy school was disallowed, they had a word. But I mean, the official line is it was a bit of a misunderstanding. I think Aguero said he thought Pep blamed him for the second goal that they conceded, more as opposed to being actually substituted. So once that was cleared up, you know, all was good again, apparently.
Rod?
I don't know. I'm not sure. It didn't look good, but you always have these little tiffs. You know, he's a good coach, and obviously got a good relationship. You're going to have fallouts, but if you've got a good relationship, you get over these kind of things.
Yeah, I agree. Much to do about nothing, eh? Right.
Yeah, exactly.
Moving on to City's title rivals, Liverpool, and they scraped past Southampton 2-1. Now, Connor, it hasn't been a great start to the season for the Saints, but if Danny Ings was wearing the boots he wore at Burnley, your lot probably would have come away with a point. Is it too early to panic, though?
Massively too early to panic. Way too early. Just doing my head in, reading the Saints Twitter, if I'm perfectly honest. Absolutely does my head in. We lost 3-0 to a Burnley side. I think people need to pay a bit more respect to. I think I've wrote this in a blog post that everyone is putting Burnley down as like they're destined to be relegated when they're not pretty, but they're an efficient, effective team. And better teams than us will lose at Burnley. It might not be 3-0, but the score doesn't matter. If you lose, you lose. And play well against Liverpool. Obviously, first half especially, Mane scored a stunner. That's what can happen when you've got a player of that quality in the side. And then once they're 1-0 up, they're comfortable. Danny Ings, that's just Danny Ings all over. He's perfectly capable of missing absolute sitters in a game, and then he'll score something that you don't expect him to. Got to live with that, unfortunately. We'll be alright though. Brighton at the weekend, not a must win. There's no must wins really with last season, this early in the season. I mean, we were 9 points 15 games last season. As long as we better that, nothing to complain about really.
Yeah, and you had a different man in charge. You sucked the life out of the club.
Oh, yeah. Oh, we don't miss him at all.
Neither does Rod, I promise. Ben, Sadio Mane, a fellow who's always in the news for whatever, especially on your Twitter timeline, people asking if he's going to be fit. He scored the goal which gave Liverpool the lead. And we've spoken about him a few times on the late fitness test. Now, the bloke makes such a difference to them, doesn't he?
Oh, he's pivotal to that team, and he's an absolute machine, by the way. You know, coming back off a very disrupted pre-season, very little break. He goes out there, maybe in the Super Cup, plays 100-plus minutes. You know, I never expected him to be dropped at Southampton, but, you know, you can maybe expect a little bit of a jaded performance, a little bit below par, but he's up and delivers again, and... you know, I think he's up there with Salah in terms of, you know, names on the team sheet. The three with Firmino as well. With Liverpool, I'm not going to say they've got defensive problems, but they've certainly, you know, I heard a stat today that they've actually conceded 46 shots in the three games that they've played this season to date. But you know what? When you've got those three up front, it's almost like you hark back to the Keegan days in Newcastle. You know, it doesn't matter what you do, you know, we're going to score. We're going to score 2, 3, 4. And they're more than capable of that. An outstanding player. I really, really like him.
Fantastic. And Rod, Liverpool walloped Norwich last week, but we did say on the review show that the Canaries will hurt a lot of teams this season. They totally outplayed Newcastle.
Whoa.
Sorry. What? Sorry, Ben. There you go. But they outplayed Newcastle at the weekend, and Pookie grabbed a hat trick. I think that's 4 goals in the opening 2 games of the season, adding to the 30 he got last season. I mean, it's not bad for a free transfer, is he?
No, he's very good. He's obviously had a good record last year, and he started like a house on fire this year. We've seen him before. If these teams that come up do well in the home games, then that could keep you up. But You know, I still think they'll need to shorten up away from home, maybe play the way they play at home, but you know, they can't play the way they did against Liverpool. They'll get torn to pieces every week, so I'm sure they'll learn by that with experience. You know, Steve Bruce, it's going to be a tough year for him. You know, I still think he's the right man for the job, but it's still going to be a tough job. And, you know, it's going to be a fight for him.
Yeah. But the thing is, Carroll Road is never an easy place to go to. It's one of those traditional football stadiums, isn't it? Kind of like Bramall Lane, really.
Yeah, it's one of them old ones. It's tight, you know, the crowd are on top of you. It's a great atmosphere. It's not the biggest of clubs, but it's a nice compact, and you get a lot of noise there, and it's a nice little ground as well. So yeah, it's and it's right out of the way. So Newcastle to Norwich, that is a trek. So I don't know if they flew or they got a train or what, but that is a trek. So it's a long way over.
I'm looking forward to the Christmas piss up from Delia Smith.
Well, it looked like who's on the sauce at Liverpool. Well, an answer.
It's coming though, isn't it? Where are you? I think this is a bit where Ben's connection goes a bit unstable, but Rod and I said last week that perhaps having Steve Bruce in charge isn't as bad as it seems, but judging by that performance, I think I might have to retract my statement. Newcastle were terrible, Ben.
Yeah, you know, the mood on Tyneside, you know, heading down there was we're more than capable of getting a point. And a lot of people fancied three. And to be honest, I've never seen that. I've never seen us going down there and you know, coming away with an easy 3 points. It's their first home game of the season. The crowd would be buoyant. But, you know, to do what we've done in the manner of the defeat is I suppose, which is the most disheartening thing. And, you know, to me, Steve Bruce, look, under Mike Ashley, and I'm not going to jump on the soapbox over Mike Ashley, but, you know, there ain't a lot going to change while he's at the club. And, you know, we're two games in, and, you know, we had Steve Bruce against Arsenal apologise for putting Willems in the wrong position, which brought about the goal for Aubameyang. And then on Saturday, when questioned, you know, well, what went wrong in this, that and the other? I don't know. I haven't got a clue. What? Well, what the fuck you paid for? Fuck me. You had Hayden, who was bombing up on the right-hand wing. You had Shelby, who, fucking hell, I think I'm fitter than him. you've got players who were frequently looking over at the touchline and almost in disbelief and not knowing what's going on. You're just wondering what's actually happening on the training pitches, what's being discussed. He came out, he had his bit say on the Saturday night, he sent his players away, and then late on the Saturday night he texts them and brings them in for a session on the Sunday morning. What? I don't know. Do you know what? It's nothing personal against Steve Bruce. It's almost just like a sticking a band-aid over it, you know, a gunshot wound.
I think the game's moved on, and he seems to be like still like prehistoric, and they need to bring someone. You know, they've gone from Rafa Benitez, who's a Champions League winner, top manager, and no disrespect to Steve Bruce, he's not on that level. So it's going to be very difficult. By the sounds of it, down there, the fans aren't happy with him at all. So it's going to be a long season for him.
No matter who come up in after Benitez up, you know, it was almost the fight and the losing battle, and you start off badly, and you know the crowd, it gets the back up, you know, the Ashley chance start again. You're expecting players like you know, all the summer signings, the Joe Lintons, the San Maxims, the Willems, they've all got to come into a country they've never played in before, and a league they've never played in, and they've got to hit the ground running, and they've got to stay fit, by the way, which they're not. For Newcastle to even stand any chance of staying up this season. And, you know, that's a lot of things that need to go in our favour for that to happen. And, like I say, we've had San Marcos already picked up a hamstring problem. Joe Linton, doesn't look to be too serious, but he went off on Saturday. You know, whether that he took a couple of knocks from Grant Hanley, you know, and whether that was as bad as the first thought or whether Joe Linton just didn't fancy it, because after he got clattered in the first 20 minutes, you know, you sort of seen he disappeared inside his shirt there. Like, I think it looked like the end of Big. You know, that top looked with three sides was too big and he was hiding inside of it. So it's going to be a long, hard season for us.
What's the deal with Longstaff? Because he's supposed to be the real deal, but he only had like 3 minutes, didn't he? No, 15 minutes. Sorry, 15 minutes.
Essentially, he's been managed. He obviously suffered quite a bad PCL injury down at West Ham in that tackle with Robert Snodgrass. So even at the beginning of July, he was talking about, you know, I've got to learn to run again. And then all of a sudden, by the end of July, he was getting involved in the pre-season friendly. So, you know, it's about managing his minutes. He's coming off the back of quite a serious injury. So it'll be a case of just sort of integrating him and building him up slowly. But, you know, time isn't a luxury that Steve Bruce has got and what we haven't got. You know, we've got Tottenham this weekend, so you may as well say, well, you know, we're 0-3, which isn't great, but, you know, I think we didn't win a game in the first 10 last season, so well, there's still hope.
Well, the thing is, it sounds really bad for me to say this, but you can tell right now from the players' body language, even at this stage of the season, that they're just not motivated. So you sent me that photograph of the players outside sitting on a paddling pool. You could just tell. It's like, why are we even? It's like a Sunday league mentality, isn't it?
Like I say, you just wanna. Some of those players, you know, will who've worked under Benitez, and the majority of the squad did. And then, with no disrespect, they look at Steve Bruce and go, "Fucking really? What is going on here?" You look at the defence, the Fabian Shaw, the Jamal Lascelles, and to an extent Dummett when he was fit. You know, that was defensively, you know, those were the mainstay, especially Lascelles and Shaw. I mean, Lascelles got himself a 6-year contract, I think, on the back of that. And on Saturday, the three of them look like they've never kicked the ball between them in their life. And at this level, you know, if you can't defend, because we certainly can't score, well, we all know where that's going to end up.
Yeah, it doesn't look good. Doesn't look good at all. There we go. Right, elsewhere, there were wins for Sheffield United at home against Crystal Palace. Bournemouth turned over Aston Villa at Villa Park. Brighton equalised 4 minutes after going behind against West Ham to earn a point, while Arsenal earned a heart-fought victory against Brexit Burnley. Meanwhile, there was more misery for Frank Lampard and Javi Gracia. Chelsea were fortunate to come away with a point at home to Leicester, and Watford's poor start to the season continues following a 1-0 loss at Goodison Park. Now, Rod, Bramall Lane, as I said before, has always been a tricky place to go to, but the uncertainty over Wilf Zaha's future made it even more difficult for Palace. That's a big win for Chris Wilder's men, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the same deal, like I said, about Norwich. You know, the home games, it needs to be a fortress and needs to be make it very, very difficult. And both Bramall Lane and Carrow Road are difficult places to go. You know, they've got a great atmosphere there. It sounded like it was bouncing on Saturday. And, it's, you know, like you said, Crystal Palace, the top player, he's not an happy bunny at the minute. And you can see that because he was the one that pulled him out of the mire most of the times last year. And he didn't seem up for it. So they need to get that right because, you know, there's some teams that have started off well and there's some teams that have started off really badly. So, you know, i.e. Newcastle, Villa, Palace, you know, if they don't win on the weekend, you know, they could be adrifted already. So, you know, they don't be playing catch up this start of the season, so they need to get points on the board quick, and Sheffield United have done that. I talked about this last year. I mean, last week, I think Sheffield United will stay up with the mentality they've got, with the manager they've got, and the home games that they need to win. I think they'll stay up.
Mm. So what about Wilf Zaha then? Because we saw the whole debacle with Arsenal, or the alleged bid from the Gunners in the summer. It just seems that when this guy isn't interested or when he's not on form, Crystal Palace suffer, and they haven't addressed it in the summer. They haven't signed a decent centre-forward. They're relying on Benteke. They're relying on Andros Townsend. I think they signed Gary Cahill at centre-back. But apart from that, Crystal Palace have done absolutely nothing in the market to for me to turn around and say they're going to be all right this season.
Yeah, but like I say, that he was the one, he was the X factor that pulled him out, that, that he got him all the points, and without him on board and with 110% with the team, you know, they're going to struggle because Benteke is a waste of time. Andrus Townsend is a good player, but he can't do it on his own. And yeah, it's you know, I don't think they have any intention of selling him because they've not brought anyone in. And the money they wanted for him was obviously too much because, you know, Arsenal had 70 odd million to spend and they chose to spend it on Pepe instead of Zaha because obviously Crystal Palace wanted too much. Zaha's nose out of joint because he was an Arsenal fan and he wanted to go there. So he's not happy and you can see it, as you can see it on Saturday, the way he played just doesn't look right.
That's right. And speaking of Arsenal, Connor, they gave debuts to Luiz and Ceballos, the latter recording two assists. It's a very attack-minded Arsenal squad, and we saw at the weekend how free-flowing they are.
Yeah, it looks good as well, doesn't it? It's nice to watch, and I think that's kind of what Arsenal fans have been moaning about for a long, long time. David Luiz looked comfortable with kind of... And Aubameyang kind of knew what he was getting. Every time Luiz got the ball, Aubameyang made a run, expecting that quality pass to come in, which we know he's capable of. But Ceballos was just fantastic. We had a guy called Has Karim on our podcast a few weeks ago, who's a Real Madrid fan. And he boldly claimed Ceballos will be the signing of the summer, even though it is only on loan. And let's be honest, if he performs consistently like he did at the weekend, he's going to be up there, isn't he? Because he had everything. He was worked hard, bit of flair. Like you say, got the assists and the passion he showed when Arsenal got the winner. That's going to endear him to the fans immediately, isn't it?
Yeah, he's quite tenacious as well, which is something you wouldn't really expect from a Spanish central midfielder, as bad as this may sound. But Ben, do you think that Arsenal should be a little bit concerned with Ceballos in terms of whether he can handle the physicality of the Premier League? I know it's a bit of a cliche, but he's come in at pretty much the right time for Arsenal, hasn't he?
Yeah, I mean, look, only time will tell in terms of his availability and how he copes with the demands. But, you know, you only have to take a look at the likes of maybe David Silva, who came into the league, you know, Spanish midfielder. His availability rates were, you know, in and around sort of 95% for most of his City career until he, you know, he picked up a couple of hamstring problems over the last, you know, maybe 12 to 18 months. So there's, you know, there's no guarantees. Well, every player suffers injuries. But for me, it's defensively that's a concern for Arsenal. You know, going forward, great, but defensively, I think, you know, particularly centrally, you know, I can see the appeal of David Luiz coming in, especially for the price. I think they paid in and around maybe 8 million, which is nothing in today's market. But, you know, for me, you know, you've maybe got Rob Holden coming back in, but I think that's an area where, you know, teams will look to exploit because... I think just, you know, they're all focused on going forward and with these, you know, not stopping, you know.
Fair enough. Well, let's talk about Aubameyang because he's on fire right now, which is obviously great for Arsenal fans and everyone who has him in their dream team. He's in great form at the moment and it's a great time for him to be in form with Liverpool on the horizon. What do you reckon, Ben?
I'm a Lacazette fan, actually, when it comes to fantasy, because I think there's a little bit more value in there. But, yeah, you know, the guy doesn't need much of a chance to convert. And anybody with, you know, with these minutes per goal ratio is always going to be a threat. The partnership that he is forming with Lacazette, I think it probably, you know, it's up there in terms of, you know, within European football, you know, there's not many better partnerships out there. So, you know, when you've got that, you've got Ceballos, and you've got maybe the Ozils, you know, to come back into that team, it's going to be an exciting place and a great place to watch football down at the Emirates.
Mm. And Rod, you can tell Aubameyang absolutely loves being at Arsenal. You can tell by his social media posts, the way that the fans interact with him and vice versa. When you've got a player of his quality that's genuinely happy at a football club, the possibilities are endless, aren't they?
Who are you talking about? So you broke up Aubameyang?
Aubameyang, yeah.
Yeah, he's dangerous. Yeah, he's very dangerous, and you know, you can say that by his goal record, and you know, again, he's fit sort of that goal really, really well. His first touch and then put it in the back of the net, and yeah, I'm with Ben. We talked about this last year. Lacazette, I really like Lacazette. You know, who do you leave up front? I think Lacazette's the better option because you know with Aubameyang out wide with the space he gets and can cut in the way he did, you know, he can pay both sides. Yeah, he's very dangerous. But what was the midfielder's name? The new lad. That's he was very very
yeah.
good. Yeah, very good, very good. You know, he's one of them players that you know the home fans have turned up. They go away happy, but they go away buzzing because they know they've got a player there.
Excellent. Right, a couple of things before we wrap up the Premier League review. VAR rating out of 10. What would you give it this weekend, gents?
I think ultimately you cannot really argue with VAR. VAR does a job and it does it well. If you've got any complaints, it's the rules in and around that. Particularly, you know, the Laporte handball and stuff. But look, it's here to stay. I don't think it's black and white now. I'll give VAR an 8.5 out of 10.
Lovely, Connor.
Yeah, I'll agree with the rating. And every point Ben said, the biggest thing for me is the Lamella rugby tackle on Rodri, which baffles me. Absolutely baffles me. No one pulled that up. But that, again, that's down to the human element of VAR, isn't it? It's a decision whether to review. And you can't control that, can you?
Yeah. And Rod's sitting there like it's Strictly Come Dancing with a 10 card, aren't you?
I agree with the lads what they're saying, but no, with the Laporte one, you've got to understand it's that the first year you're going to get teething problems. I think they may change them kind of laws that obviously are not right, but they've obviously going off the last year's goals that the handballs were going in by. But you know, it's obviously they've got to tweak the rules, but you know, it's the first year, so you're going to get teething problems. But like I say, ultimately, every single decision by the letter of the law, it was right. So yeah, I'd give it a 9.
Oh, Bruno Tonioli's sitting there crying. Why you not give a 9?
But with Connor's one, listening to Dermot Gallagher, the way he was talking about it, is because the referee has not given the penalty, so the guy in the studio can't really overturn him if he doesn't see anything. Where it's difficult, really, because he's just basically pulling him down his shoulder, isn't he? So I don't know. What if the guy on the screens have got a different opinion to the referee? I don't know how that works. So it's just by.
We're still learning, aren't we?
Exactly. Like I say, it's the first year, you're going to get teething problems, but eventually they'll get it right, and ultimately every single decision was right over the weekend.
Great stuff. Right, before we go into our another news section, we're going to quickly play Kojo Araujo. Now, I don't know if you guys have played, well, Ben hasn't played this before, Connor might know about this, but just a quick reminder, our friend Kojo from the Three Midfield podcast, he loves fantastic players, gifted footballers, and he doesn't like the likes of Rojo, which is understandable. So what I'm going to do, guys, I'm going to give you a list of players from this weekend, and you need to tell me whether their performance was Kojo or Rojo, and I'm going to put 30 seconds on the clock. So I'm going to say the person's name, I'm going to give you the player, and you need to tell me whether it's Kojo or Rojo. Good?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right. Let's go. Ben Ceballos.
Kojo.
Excellent. Rod, Nick Pope.
Kojo.
Connor, Will Zaha.
Rojo.
Ben, Timo Pukki or Timu Pukki.
Oh, Kojo.
Connor, Yoshida.
Oh, go Kojo then.
Rod, Jamie Vardy.
Kojo.
Ben, Mason Mount.
Kojo.
Time is up. Excellent. Kojo wins again this week. Kojo wins. I love it when Kojo wins, but whenever he hears a player he doesn't like, you know what he says, don't you? I'm just.
And let's be honest, when you said Zaha, you knew exactly what the answer was going to be, regardless.
There you go. And you know what Kojo says at this time?
I don't want to talk about that guy.
Right, gentlemen, one more thing. It's called In Other News, and we'll just quickly round up some European football. As you know, the Hipster Liga, also known as the Bundesliga, got off to an interesting start as champions Bayern were held to a draw at home against Hertha Berlin, while Dortmund came from a goal down to beat Augsburg? I don't know. 5-1. Connor, Dortmund brought in Mats Hummels this summer, and they added him to the signings of Thorgan Hazard, Nicole Schultz, and Julian Brandt. Now, on paper, this actually looks like a much more dynamic team than Bayern. Is it Dortmund's year this year, or are they going to bottle it again?
I think they're going to bottle it again, if I'm perfectly honest.
Oh, man. Why?
I think saying Dortmund are going to bottle it is unfair. I just don't think Bayern are going to let them win. I think they cracked the door, but it's never going to open. Bayern didn't start great, but they're a machine, and they've signed Coutinho now. Dortmund just have this ability to collapse in big games. Maybe Hummels will come in and help prevent that, but it's still a very young, very inexperienced, maybe a little bit naive side. We'll see how it goes, but my money would definitely be on Bayern.
Brilliant. And Ben, Bayern lost Ribery and Robben, but they brought in Perisic from Inter and announced the loan signing of Coutinho yesterday. Now, given what you saw of the Brazilian at Liverpool, will he pull up any trees in Germany?
Let's hope so. I mean, you know, I think Coutinho went into the La Liga and Barcelona and everybody was expecting big things. So there's a different kind of pressure in Bayern. Almost he's got to prove to himself and prove to, you know, supporters that he can still deliver. Undoubtedly, you know, he will. But it's just, you know, how long it's going to take to bed in. I own Coutinho in the Football Index, so I'm hoping for some big performances to see his share price rocket and hopefully cash out for a few quid.
Yeah, gamble responsibly, ladies and gents. Don't put any money on Wolf Zaha. Whatever, yeah. Yeah. Right, on to La Liga, where big spenders in Madrid won their opening games. Real minus Eden Hazard waltzed to a 3-1 win at Celta Vigo, while Atleti, who gave a debut to Trippier and João Félix, huffed and puffed to a 1-0 home victory over Celta. Now, Rod, Zidane has done a reluctant U-turn on Bale, saying he's going to stay, and we all have to think that's a positive thing. Now, Bale responded with an assist and a decent performance. Is it too soon to say they've kissed and made up?
Well, it looks that way, but, you know, it looks that way. You know, if you're scoring and you're playing, you know, he'll be your best mate, but it's just not how long it's last because, you know, his history's not great with injuries. So, but there's no doubt if Gareth Bale is fit, he's one of the top five players in the world. There's no doubt about that. So why would you not keep him? But like I say, there's always that question mark about his injury prone. But if he's fit and he's doing what he's doing, then he surely should start in that team.
That's right, absolutely. And Connor, João Félix had an impressive debut, but it kind of reminds you of Ronaldo's for United against Bolton. This lad is going to be some player, isn't he?
The run that won the penalty was just unbelievable. He seems to be minutes ahead of other players, let alone seconds. He's quick, stronger than he looks. Obviously, loves his left foot. And I was saying on my recording earlier, everything looks better when you use your left foot. I've been 120 million. It seemed like a lot of money, but it's been 90 minutes and already you're going, could be a bargain in a few years' time, because let's be honest, he's showing the potential to be right up there with Mbappe in a few years, isn't he?
You could tell his nickname is going to be Kleenex. Anyway. And on a final note, Connor, can we also address Adarithi's winner against Barcelona? I mean, what is a 38-year-old doing scoring a bicycle kick in the last minute?
He does what he wants. He's a proper thorn in the side of Barcelona, isn't he? I think fair play to him. It was his first touch as well, wasn't it?
That's right.
Coming on from Naki Williams. Fair play. If you're going to score a winner, do that, especially against Barcelona. Blimey.
But that game was
Barcelona, I think.
That game was dreadful, man. It was It was terrible. I remember I was actually watching it for 5 minutes upside down. I was on the couch upside down watching it to see if it would be even entertaining, but it wasn't. And then that happened. I was like, wow, okay.
I give up on Spanish football years ago. It's just dreadful.
I'm with you. I'm with you on that. Everyone always says, oh, what's the best leagues in top five? I will always put La Liga bottom because I can't stand watching it.
It's dreadful.
So everyone goes, oh, this is going to be, might be quite controversial. Everyone goes on about the Spain 2010, 2012 teams. And even that Barcelona team that Pep had, they were great for what, 10 minutes of the 90 collectively. But Jesus Christ, I get bored of just passing it back and forth all the time. Do something with it.
You're going to get a bull's head sent to your house, aren't you? Wake up in the middle of the night with a bull's head.
Steve Bruce.
See where I live, I get worse than that. Bloody hell.
Now, we're not encouraging animal cruelty here, ladies and gentlemen. Before anyone starts, you know, tweeting us and saying, oh, Ricky Gervais is going to get all bent out of shape about that. I'm not going to say anything. But anyway, right, gentlemen, that is it for tonight's show. Thank you ever so much for joining me. Before I let you guys go, Twitter handles and anything else. Rod?
Rod James Giggs.
Connor?
At Connor Dunford Zero.
And your non-shooter defence related platform?
Shooter. _ shootout, because some bastards have taken the ones about underscores.
I think Shoot Magazine's actually one of them.
Fucking hell. I'll email.
Great stuff. And Mr. Dinnery?
On Twitter most days, at Ben Dinnery.
Superb. And Wednesday night, we'll be recording the late fitness test with Johnny.
We will do, yes. Looking forward to it. Already got me a little black book of topics lined up, so hopefully should be another good show.
Excellent. And I've got my mullet wig, which I'll be wearing while recording. paying homage to him.
Long live the mullet.
There you go. Superb. One more thing before we go, ladies and gents. A good friend of the show's Dan, unfortunately he lost a relative the other day, tragic circumstances. Dan, as you guys know, filled in for me the other week. He's been a loyal listener to the show, a loyal friend, you know, one of the nicest guys you'll ever meet, and our thoughts go out to him and his family. I wasn't sure whether I should say anything or not, because it's too soon, but I don't think he'll be upset about us mentioning it. So yeah, our thoughts are with you, Dan, and as you know, mate, pick up the phone whenever you need anything. We're always here. Right, that's it, ladies and gents. So until next time, take care.